Have you ever discovered something absolutely unexplainable? What if you were bribed by the government to leave the only home that you've ever known? Could there truly be a direct portal to hell in the form of a hole? Today, we test the believability of the devil's hole.
Welcome to Believing the Bizarre,
where we dive into the unknown and the unusual
and tell you whether or not we find it believable.
That is right. This is not about the devil's butt. Let me just say that up front.
It made me think of Ricky Bobby. That's Talladega Nights. Bobby Mackey's.
The portal to hell.
Yeah.
Is a well or a portal to hell? I believe is word for word.
That's right. Yeah.
I just wanted to reaffirm, you know, because it's like the devil's hole, it leaves some interpretation.
Yeah, there's room for being gross.
Yeah, and if you don't like that, if you don't like that phrasing, if you don't like the terminology, which we'll get into why it is what it is, but you can also call it Mel's hole, because Mel's the person, I don't want to say that discovered it, but this is their story. This is the story of Mel. It's really more about Mel than the hole. My opinion.
All right, I'm very interested in hearing about Mel.
Oh, I just want to say this up now, because I need to like get it out in the world, because I like try and watch videos on words and stuff. Monastash. It takes place in Washington, specifically
near
Monastash Ridge. Yeah.
Oh, really?
We're a Pacific Northwest territory.
Yeah.
And I also looked this up. It's about 2 hours east of Seattle.
So okay.
I figure some point, I feel like you were going to be like,
where is it?
Where is it in
Probably.
Washington? Because I feel like that happens every time. I'm like, you know, it's like by Idaho and like it's west of Ohio. But I'm not there yet where I can tell you how many miles. Like, I feel like people either live in how many miles is it from Seattle or how many hours.
We've talked about it before, but yeah.
There's we use places, hours here in Ohio.
Different places use time.
In a year, miles. Maybe I'll be telling you miles. Right now, I do some miles calculations later, just to get you math nerds a little excited. I also want to say this, just because this takes place in Washington. The coolest music venue that I've ever been to was actually in Washington, the Gorge.
Yeah.
And that is true until I make it to Red Rocks. That will surpass the Gorge. But until then, it is what it is. So I want to say this up front. One, my main source of this content that I'm going to be reporting on is from a website called Mysterious Universe. They did a really good job reporting on the Devil's Hole. And two, the majority of the story was also told on a radio show called Coast to Coast AM.
Oh, I love Coast to Coast.
Yeah, so that's like, for the people that don't know, it's late night talk radio.
Yep.
Been around since the 80s. They normally talk about paranormal stuff, conspiracies, and it was founded by Art Bell.
Yep.
So just to get those two things out there, that's like, I'm putting my bibliography up front. Or we're excited for you MLA people out there. So, with all of that out of the way, are you ready to begin The Devil's Hole? So, again, this takes place in Monastash Ridge, Washington.
Nailed it. Dude, I'm going to tell you right now, you nailed it. I'm confident.
I wrote it out phonetically.
Good.
I wrote Monastash.
Good.
Monastash. I would have said Monastash, honestly, being transparent. If I would have just looked at it, and I'm like, I'm going to confidently read this. Monastash. But it's Monastash, apparently. Unless the one YouTube video I watched is wrong. Right. Don't come at me. And this takes place in the early 1990s, aka when I was born.
Oh,
when you were born.
Very little. Very, very young.
And it involves a man named Mel Waters.
You asked me off air if I've ever heard of this. I have no idea what this is about. So I'm really excited.
I'm glad you said that, because now I know.
I love learning these stories, so I'm really excited too.
So, Mel owns property near Monastash Ridge, which is also near the Yakurim firing range and the Hanford Nuclear Reservation. No idea what that reservation is or means. Maybe they adopt orphan nuclear bombs.
Or like little like
when they get dropped
pieces of plutonium.
Yeah.
It grows up to be like a little nuke.
Yeah, little nuke.
Yeah.
Little nuke, yeah. I don't know. But The majority of his home and property were not that special. It's just, you know, living out in Washington, got the Pacific Ocean right there and other stuff on the other side of you, you know, Washington life. There was one unique thing on his property, a hole.
Okay.
Yes, but not like a 6-foot grave or a snake hole or a gopher hole or a golf hole or any other holes you can think of. This was a very special hole. And while the exact location hasn't been identified, it's believed that this hole is located in a densely forested area on his property. And at this point in the story, it doesn't have a name or anything, a moniker or anything like that. It was just, to them, it was kind of considered this bottomless well. And why was this the case? Because humans are trash. And what do I mean by that? I mean, we are trash because we don't know what to do with our trash. They, like Mel, neighbors, people in the area, they treated this hole like a never-ending garbage can.
Oh, so they just like kept putting their weekly trash into this hole.
Every time. Everything. Like, like they thought it was like your computer's recycling bin. Or like the garbage can in The Sims and that's on the street that is always never ending.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I bet this town sucked for the waste management company. Imagine they're like trying to start a business and all these people keep canceling. Like, I don't need waste management. I got the bottomless hole.
Or that's where they dumped it into.
That's true. That's probably what the waste management did. They're like, oh, we don't need an offloading area. We just got this hole. Here's our garbage hole. Here's our recycling hole. Okay. Joking aside, everyone really did treat it like a unofficial dumping ground from traditional.
And Mel was cool with that.
Yeah.
Okay.
Well, in his mind, it just never ended.
Okay.
And it was like you were saying, weekly traditional garbage bags, you know, even broken appliances, televisions.
Oh, really?
Refrigerators, tires. This is like 9 feet in diameter. So it's not like a tiny hole. So you could fit a fridge. Imagine like, hey, buddy, can you help me bring my fridge to the hole on Mel's property in the densely forested area? I really don't need it anymore.
Huh. And they just threw it in there.
Dumped it in. Yeah.
All right. All right.
Also, people apparently didn't even want to bury their pets. If their pet died or if a farmer's animal died or anything like that, they would literally take the carcass and just
to the hole,
chuck it down the hole.
You gotta bury.
They went Scottie Pippen.
Oh,
or no. I guess, you know, at that time, I guess it wouldn't have been Kobe. Shout out Kobe, rest in peace Kobe. It'd have been like Magic.
Yeah, that's right.
It kind of was Magic, actually. Yeah. That would have actually been very appropriate if they would have shot it in there and said Magic
and then it was gone.
Right, talk about out of sight, out of mind. So what exactly does this hole look like? I already kind of touched on it a little bit. It's about 9 feet in diameter and for about 15 feet down. I'll be honest. I'm not great at visualizing like depth when it comes to like distance. I'm just not good at that. But reportedly about 15 feet down was lined with like brick.
Oh, really?
So you're looking down this hole and like 15 feet, the inner siding of it was brick. And then after about 15 feet, it was just dirt, you know, whatever, really? Whatever earthiness the hole would be.
Why was it brick for 15? I'm sure you'll tell me, but
they probably ran out of
interested.
No, there's no answer to that. They just,
really?
They probably maybe they ran out.
Oh, I know why, because it's a gateway to hell.
They drop the rest down. They're like, oh, well, do you want to get it? No. Do you want to get it? No. Do you want to get it?
That's crazy that it's bricked up. That's nuts.
Yeah. Maybe it's red brick. Ooh.
I would imagine.
The devil, you know, red.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. So on to the story with Mel. So Mel bought this property back in 1993 and immediately found and noticed the hole. He claimed that it gave him kind of weird feelings and he felt oddly drawn to the hole. But for the most part, he used it the same way as everyone else. Just a big old natural dumpster.
Like he had like weird intrusive thoughts like jump down the hole.
Yeah, jump down here, Mel. The water's fine.
And he's like, that's weird.
Maybe sometimes he would just walk outside, look at the stars and be like, I wonder what the hole's thinking about. Is the hole thinking about me? Or maybe it's just like during his everyday life, he would just naturally be like, oh yeah, there's a hole that just never ends.
He's looking at the moon, just like, me and the hole are both looking at the same moon right now.
It's kind of romantic. So, but as it's always on his mind and as he's thinking about it, he started feeling like it's pretty strange that after all these years and all this shit and garbage and dead animals and fridges and tires, you're not seeing any of it build up. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like maybe for the first year, you're like, oh yeah, out of sight, out of mind. But you'd think after years, you would start seeing some stuff on top, or at least hearing like the clutter as it rearranges and falls, you know, something like that. So in his words, he said, quote, well, so we've been here several years and we just take all of our trash rubbish there. Anything we have to get rid of, we take it, throw it in the hole there. Everyone's throwing their stuff in the hole. The people from around there throw all the stuff in the hole. I mean, it's been going on for a long time. Well, I got to thinking one day, how come this hole's not filling up? It must be an awfully deep hole, unquote. And if you're wondering, like, ooh, who'd he talk to? Where'd this come from? Remember what I mentioned at the beginning. He had a long interview and multiple of them on Coast to Coast AM.
Yeah, okay.
So my sourcing is taking from that sourcing. So it's a bottomless hole, right?
Yeah.
Pretty amazing. Yeah, yeah. Pretty amazing. So fast forward 3 years to the summer of 1996.
Oh, okay.
And Mel, the ever curious Mel, was like, I'm going to try an experiment of my own. I'm going to find out exactly how deep this hole really is. So just out of curiosity, what would you do to try and find out how deep the hole is?
Well, I would wait till it was dark and I would... Well, let me finish.
Okay. Just enough so I can't see.
And I would snap a glow stick and throw it down the hole.
Ah, okay.
That's what I would do first.
That's not a bad idea.
Thank you.
That's not... You know what? When you lost me for a minute. Like, it's the opposite. Instead of that you had me in the first half, you caught me at the end.
Gotcha.
Because at first I'm like, what? Okay. So Mel considered himself a pretty good angler. In fishing terms. So he had a ton of fishing line at his disposal. So he rigged the line so it was at the center of the hole, and he attached that to what he described as a triangular 1 pound standard lead fish weight.
Sure.
Just to give it that little oomph it needs, you know, that good sinker. All that attached to a very long spool of fishing line, and he started lowering it and lowering. And lowering it, and to his surprise, he never reached the bottom. He attached spool after spool, going through every inch that he had. He even decided to tie a roll of lifesavers to the fishing line to see if maybe, okay, just maybe his fishing line was hitting water, and without enough weight on there, it was just hitting the water, kind of laying on top, and he wasn't feeling that, though.
Okay.
Like maybe, like, you know what I mean? Like it felt like it was just going, but really he was just releasing a bunch of slack.
Gotcha.
But when he would bring the fishing line back up and the roll of lifesavers back up, they were both completely dry.
After about an hour and a half of winding.
Hopefully he has some good podcasts in 1996 or a good album. I don't know. There's a Dave Matthews album that came out in 96, but it's called Crash. But anyway, but you know, I was also thinking that, you know, wouldn't also the line be wet? Maybe it's so thin you can't tell.
Probably that.
Dries really fast. So he left empty-handed on, well, he had his
fishing line.
And his fishing line. But he left empty-handed in terms of the knowledge of knowing how far this hole really went down. So at this point, Mel is becoming even more obsessed with figuring out the mystery of this hole. Because remember, it's not just something he forgot, you know, where it wasn't his weekly trash duty. Like, he felt a connection to this hole.
Was,
you know what I mean? It wasn't a one-time Tuesdays magic. Kobe's close to coming in. I think he's in late 90s. I don't think he's there in 96.
I have no clue.
Okay. I'm just trying to draw that connection. So, he's curious. He wants to figure out what to do. He goes through rolls and rolls of fishing line. Like, he keeps going back and keeps adding to it, trying to go longer and further, just absolutely determined to find out how deep this is.
Oh, that's what she said.
He comes to the conclusion that this hole was more than 80,000 feet deep.
Wow.
And just for reference from my very talented Google search, the longest reported hole I found is in Russia, and it's 40,000 feet. So this is more than double what was considered the deepest man-made hole on Earth in Russia. So as shocking as that revelation was for Mel, this was only the beginning. So one thing he tried to do was yell in the hole. This might have been something I would have done before the fishing line,
but probably.
You know, it's kind of like, when you scream and you hear the echo and see how far it goes and, you know, anything like that, just to get something back or maybe some type of feel. Might have also been an act of desperation, you know, like you're frustrated. Maybe he just yelled because he was frustrated about the fishing line. But one thing that was very strange is that there was no echo.
What?
It was like absolutely muffled. No sound, no echo at all. He also noticed that his dogs were absolutely terrified of this hole. Whenever he got close with them, they would dig their paws in the ground to prevent from getting any closer and start barking.
Dogs are like, that shit's deep.
No, that's too deep, man. I can doggy paddle, but shit, I can't do that. Again, in Mel's words, he said, quote, "Well, I mean, the thing to do is kind of like yell into there and see an echo. And I never heard an echo come out of that thing. And it's one of the first things I noticed about it. As usual, I brought the dogs with me, but they wouldn't go anywhere near the damn thing. And then went back to the Suburban and hung out over there. If I try to bring them there on a leash, they'll just dig their feet in. They don't want to go anywhere near that hole." Unquote. So we got echoes. We have this strong obsession for Mel pulling him into this hole, his curiosity.
Yeah.
We have a deep hole.
Figuratively. And,
but yeah. Well, I guess right now it's only figuratively.
Yeah.
And we have this deep hole. Over 80,000 feet, potentially. We have dogs, terrified dogs.
Judged by Mel.
Maybe he's as bad as at judging as I am.
Yeah.
And as if that wasn't enough, things get way crazier.
What?
Dude, okay, you said what? Like, you're a little surprised. Wouldn't you be a little disappointed if the episode stopped right now?
I have no idea what's going on with this hole, so I don't know what...
Okay, you'd be a little disappointed if that was
if this episode. Is the end?
It's this big hole with no echo, and they throw garbage in it.
Perhaps if that was the conclusion.
You'd off the air... See, he's being nice right now. Off the air, I'd be like, Tyler, that's what you brought to the table. Okay, remember how I said that one of the common things that were thrown down in the hole was dead pets and carcasses?
Yeah, I remember that.
Well, one guy that Mel knew, his dog died.
Oh, that's sad.
And he felt sad about it, but he did what everyone else did, and he chucked that dog.
Not sad enough.
Down the hole. And he said, magic. To his absolute shock, his dog returned from the dead. We are talking Pet Cemetery.
Oh, no. Oh, no.
This man was a hunter, and while he was out and about hunting, he saw his old dog. It literally looked like the same dog. It had the same exact collar that he remembered leaving on it. It was literally his dog.
What happened?
So let's go to Mel's words.
Oh, my God.
Quote, "One guy claims he threw his departed canine down into the hole, and the guy that did it swears the dog actually came back to him. He was a hunter, and he was out hunting, and he saw the same dog. He had the same collar. He had the same little metal thing on his collar there, and he said it was the same dog. And he says he knew that that was the dog that he threw into the hole." Unquote. So apparently, this report about the resurrected dog had such a strong effect on Mel, and he believed it so intensely that he changed it in his will in the 90s that when Mel dies, he wants to be thrown into the hole. I don't know if that's still true to this day. Maybe he's changed it since mid-90s, but at that time, he was like, well, shit.
Pet Cemetery.
Well, he must not have read the book. I don't think the movie was out. Well, the movie might have been.
What's like the famous quote from Pet Cemetery? Like, don't bury him there. They change there or something like that.
Oh, I don't know.
You know what I'm talking about. I love the accent. I love that accent. It's so funny.
Did you watch the new movie?
No.
It's fine. So at this point, naturally, Mel just felt like he could not contain everything going on, whether it was the excitement, absolute disbelief, or just the desire to tell someone, because hint, hint, his marriage isn't doing too good right now.
Oh, no.
He's become a little obsessed with this whole... You know,
like it at dinner, he's talking about the whole, at bedtime, he's talking about the whole night, like morning routine, wakes up, talks about the whole, his wife's like, can we leave the whole alone for like an hour? And he's like, maybe the whole needs some coffee. I'm going to go take it some coffee.
I'm going to go dump it some coffee. I think, does it like creamer or does it like half and half?
She's like, I don't know. It's your whole.
So this is when the story went public. It was at this point that Mel decided he wanted to fax. Yes, kids, look it up.
Fax.
He sent a fax to the radio host, Art Bell, of Coast to Coast AM. And whatever it said, it piqued Bell's attention, and he brought Mel on, and they discussed his story.
So now he's the Holes, like, publicist?
Yes.
Yeah.
You can actually listen to it. It's not on YouTube. I think there's like a website I found. Maybe I'll post it in the episode description. But you can actually listen to the initial interview.
I want to listen to it.
Multiple hours long. It's a long one. Or you can just listen to this podcast right here and get the, you know.
The gist.
Get the fill. Because we fill here, unlike that hole. So naturally, the Devil's Hole is right up his alley. And they discussed it on February of 1997. It became super popular among Coast to Coast AM fans, and apparently Mel was even brought back on the show a few days later, so this continued on.
This might not be the right spot for it, but I have a little story about Coast to Coast AM.
No, I think this is the perfect spot for it.
Okay. So, when my mom was with her sister, it was like one like early morning, I was in college, and it was like an early, early morning, it was like 2 or 3 a.m., like they got up to go somewhere. And they stopped and got breakfast at like a Denny's. And they walked in and there were like 15 people at like this huge table. It was a Coast to Coast listen party happening live. And she said they were dressed with like costumes and stuff. And they found out because they asked them what they were doing. And they invited my mother and my aunt to sit and listen to Coast to Coast with them. And they did for like a half an hour.
Would you have joined them?
This point in my life, I think I would have.
If you're at Denny's late at night, what else do you have going on? You're clearly putting sleep on the shelf.
Yeah.
You're not making great life decisions being at Denny's. No, no offense. When I ate meat, I actually genuinely loved Denny's nachos. Now, that could just literally have been dog meat.
Yeah.
I don't mean like actual dog. I mean like the food you would give a dog.
Grade D meat.
Yeah, exactly. That's probably what it was. But I'll be honest, that was some of my favorite nachos when I ate meat. But you're already not making great decisions. You're putting sleep on the shelf.
Yeah, it's I don't know why.
That's really cool, though.
Yeah, it's just strange.
Do you listen to the show?
Occasionally. Occasionally when I'm up, or if I have like a real hankering for it, I'll find it on YouTube or something.
A real hankering.
Yeah.
So the fans of this show are actually the ones that dubbed it Mel's Hole. Like, I feel like the story now, as a whole, pun intended, has changed it to Devil's Hole, and Mel calls it Devil's Hole. But that's why it's like synonym. Like you can say, I'll probably put in this episode description, it'll probably be Devil's Hole, a.k.a. Mel's Hole, because they're one and the same.
Okay.
Just to get that out there. Which is pretty cool having a paranormal bottomless pit named after you, right?
Better than nothing.
Better than nothing, right. But in the words of the great Taylor Swift, loose lips sink ships. Now, somebody else might have said that before her, but I'm gonna give her credit. Give her the credit. But think about it, okay? You're on a popular radio show. You talk about this crazy, unbelievable thing, this location that you can travel to.
I thought you'd say you're a pop star.
Not a pop star. You are a pop star if you're Taylor Swift. If you're Mel, you might have messed up.
Yeah.
So what do you think would happen?
I would say he told a bunch of people about the hole. They all want to see the hole.
Well, he told Art about it, who has a huge listenership. So shortly after his story aired on Coast to Coast AM, Mel was en route to what, you know, he called Devil's Hole for more research because, you know, he's obsessed. When he was suddenly stopped by a few men, one man was in normal plain clothing and two other men were in military uniforms and they simply claimed to be, quote, government agents, unquote. These agents informed Mel that a plane had just recently crashed nearby and that the entire area had been closed off. While the agents were speaking with Mel, he noticed that there were a few military personnel behind them that were wearing bright yellow hazmat suits.
Gotcha.
So a couple things. One, Mel had not heard a plane crash or any reports in the area of a plane crash. Two, this was technically his private property. This isn't a public, you know, public property right next to his house that he liked to visit, like a park. This is his land that he owned. So he was pretty pissed.
Yeah.
He didn't like the idea of some government official coming in and telling him what he could or could not do on his own land. He's got freedoms. Still, the agents persisted that no one but military personnel would be allowed into the restricted area at this time. And again, Mel angrily told the agents that it was his property and he demanded that they let him pass through. And this final plea was met with a chilling, matter-of-fact threat by the agent. The agent told Mel that that if Mel didn't follow their orders and turn around immediately, they would falsely accuse him of concealing a meth lab in his home and arrest him by any means necessary, assuming that they would literally manufacture a meth lab at his home to blackmail him.
Wow.
I guess it's not technically blackmail, but to accuse him.
Falsify evidence.
Falsify evidence, yeah. So, it's pretty intense.
Yeah.
So, after this exchange between Mel and the agents leaked, the military officers at the nearby base, remember the Yakima? I looked up the other thing, right?
Yes.
I'm going to look up one per. You get one. But this training center, completely dismissed this incident. They were like, hey, no. We're not hiding a plane crash. We're not hiding an 80,000 foot pit. We're just here for training. We're trying to train, and that's it. So
Mel
they completely
smell.
Yeah, exactly. That was probably what they said. They blew it off. Of course, this type of government interference could have come from something higher ranked than that.
That could be.
Or they were hiding it for them, or maybe they were just kept in the dark about it. So there's multiple angles here at play. So these sightings of military agents on his property became more and more frequent. Clearly, despite getting his story, quote, out there and the flame he was getting from Coast to Coast AM, the military were intent on keeping Mel far away from the Devil's Hole. It got to the point that the agents bribed Mel. They're like, we got to take care of this dude. He's got too much fishing line, too much time on his hands. Clearly, he's not paying attention to his wife. He is a problem. And they made him the following offer. If Mel agreed to lease his land and his property to the government, they would pay him $250,000 in the 90s.
Oh.
Which is like maybe like $400,000. It's a lot.
No, it's more.
However, there was a catch. Mel had to leave. Not just leave his land, not just leave the city, not just leave the state of Washington. He had to leave the country immediately.
The country?
Immediately.
Did they say where he had to go?
No, just out of the country.
Mm.
So it was an offer that Mel could not refuse. And he's like, I...
Deuces.
So he was like, okay, there's a lot of money.
Yeah.
My marriage has gone to shit. There's not much left here for me. It's just a hole. There's a lot of money. And I love wombats. So what he did was he actually took the money. He got on a plane. He went to Australia and he started a wombat rescue operation for a couple of years.
I'm really into that. That's awesome. That's great.
Isn't that pretty sweet?
That's cool.
Now, what if this was the end of the story?
It'd be a nicer ending.
Yeah. Nice ending, right?
Yeah.
Not where the story ends.
Okay.
So while he enjoyed his time in Australia, and he did feel very passionately about what he was doing, like that's aside from all the whole stuff,
that
whole crazy stuff, he really did like what he was doing. He liked Australia and he was raking in the money.
Really?
I think it doesn't say exactly how it was. It wasn't, I don't think he was just given $250,000. I think it was like, we're going to give you like a weekly or monthly
allowance. Like a stipend or something.
Exactly. But he was thinking about he was thinking about maybe the hunting guy.
Oh, can I ask a question really quick?
Yeah.
Did he ever meet Steve Irwin or something?
Steve Irwin?
Yeah, because he's from Australia.
You think, dude, there's so many people.
And he ran a wombat. I don't know.
Maybe. He might have. You know what? Because of his operation, he might have.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking.
Yeah, he might have.
All right. Like, I'm crazy.
It's like, oh, that guy's Australian, and now he's in Australia.
He worked with animals.
I it's closer now. See, you keep catching me at the end. I'm gonna back off now, all right? It's like you throw me off in the first half with this darkness and this, hey, look, they're both from Australia.
I'm good at that.
You let my guard down and then you come in with the 1-2. But anyways, what I'm trying to say is he got homesick, all right? He's okay. Like, I miss Washington. I miss my dogs.
I miss the rain.
I miss the rain. I miss Seattle being 2 hours west of me. I miss the Monastash Ridge. So obviously this was in violation of his contract with the government agents. So as you can imagine, this did not work out well for Mel.
What happened?
So first of all, almost as soon as he landed, he noticed that his pay was completely cut off. It was done.
Oh, wow.
No more payments. Donezo. And he started to get the feeling now that it wasn't a pay him and forget about it. Like, okay, you know, like wipe your hands clean solution. We're all good. He started feeling like, okay, they must have eyes on me.
Yeah, definitely.
He must be being watched. If it literally as soon as he landed, it was like, no more money. Two, while riding on a bus to Olympia, Mel testified that he witnessed an aggressive dispute between a couple of other people on the bus and a few police officers. That seems so unbelievable to me. So while the police officers claimed to remove Mel from the bus so they could get more information from him and to construct an official police report about what he witnessed, what he saw, that exact moment was the last thing that Mel remembered for almost 2 weeks.
What? Whoa.
The next thing that Mel remembered was stumbling around San Francisco 13 days later. He had no clue what happened the past 2 weeks, nor how he got to San Francisco.
Whoa.
But once he started coming to, once he started realizing where he was at and moving around, collecting his bearings, he noticed that his entire body was sore, like he had been beaten viciously. Also, he noticed that his rear molars had been removed during his blackout, and there were IV marks on his arms.
Oh, like not his wisdom teeth, his rear molars.
Yes, yeah. Okay. The back ones. So this made him believe, obviously, that he was intentionally subdued, and he didn't know whether he'd been drugged or if the police officers he was talking to were actually the government agents in disguise, or if they ratted on him, if he'd been wanted. He doesn't know. He still doesn't know to this day. All he knows is he got messed up and he has no idea what happened during that time. Either way, he was on edge and completely terrified. He ended up calling his nephew, who wired him enough money to get back to his original property back at Manassas Ridge. So upon his arrival at his property, Mel was served with legal documents by the government agents in black suits with black sunglasses. These documents stated that his ownership of the land was in question due to, quote, modifications, unquote, that had been made while he was gone, when the government was in control of his land.
What? So they said, this isn't your land because we made modifications.
Yeah, it's messed up.
Yeah.
It's messed up. And very Men in Black, like,
yes,
you know, little things there. A few days after he got back, one of Mel's neighbors saw him outside and approached him. Probably like, hey, I'm still throwing shit in your hole. Sounds like an insult, but he was doing that. But they told Mel that they saw large black vans outside Mel's house while he was away in Australia. And in addition to those black vans, men in suits were often searching and tearing things apart around the area.
Wow.
Searching. Looking. So Mel thanked his neighbor for telling him what had been going on. And obviously, his intense suspicion grew. He believed that the original agents, the agents searching his property, and these mysterious black vans and his blackout were all connected, even if he couldn't prove it. And to make matters worse, and keep in mind, something was in his mouth. He got his molars taken out. He was very shortly after diagnosed with cancer of the esophagus.
What?
Yeah, so that's your throat for, you know. Not the windpipe, the food pipe, as I like to say.
So elegant.
Thank you. So feeling lost, down, and pretty desperate, Mel decided to reach out to the only person and the only people that he thought would listen and care. Art Bell and Coast to Coast AM.
Yeah.
He hit him up again, hopefully by like telephone this time. Fax is so, you know, 1997. I believe this is 2000 now. We're in that decade.
Okay.
A day later, his house was open. Just kidding. I wrote that in here. That's a good joke. So while his life was spiraling down, Mel was looking for a new purpose, and he decided that he found his calling. He took it upon himself to research and discover other mysterious holes around the world. And believe it or not, he actually found a second hole that was similar in size and notoriety as the Devil's Hole. It doesn't have a cool name, though. It's just kind of like the second hole.
Okay.
Or the Nevada Hole. Because, hint, he traveled to Nevada.
Right.
And this one was apparently on public land.
Okay.
Yeah. But unlike the intimidating agents around this hole, Mel made friends with the local Basque people in the area, along with some of the Native American tribes.
I was going to say the local skinwalkers.
They're like, it's totally fine. Just jump in, man. It's all good. That we already jumped in, so why don't you jump in?
Yeah.
It's your turn. But they took him to the hole. They're like, oh, do you want to see our hole? It's like 9 feet in diameter. It's pretty cool. Want to come check it out? Do you have any garbage with you? Any receipts you don't need?
Did this one have brick too?
It was a little different.
Okay.
It was a little different. Instead of the bricks, it had what they called a solid metallic collar sticking out, like a kind of like a metal outlining.
Okay.
So it was more metallic than brick. Mm. It's like it like upgraded, you know what I mean? Like it got to a certain stage in life or like
everything's chrome in the future.
Yeah, exactly. So he discerned that this metal collar was definitely man-made,
mm-hmm.
you know, cause, you know, the eye test. And it, he said it rose about 2 feet above the hole. And similar to the lack of echoes that he heard with the devil's hole, he accidentally found himself in another sound test with this new Nevada hole. But instead of screaming or yelling into it looking for an echo, he accidentally dropped an entire toolbox on the metal collar of this hole. And to his surprise, again, the collision of his toolbox and this metal collar did not make a sound at all. Complete silence. So he started wondering if these holes had a built-in noise dampener or what could be going on, if they're soundproof. But more importantly, why? Like, if this is the case, if this is built by us or other things, or if it's just naturally occurring, why?
Kind of, why doesn't it be quiet?
Yeah, it's kind of creepy, actually, if you think about it. Mel also claimed that the area around the collar is warm year-round, and it was so warm and radiated so much heat that it could actually keep nearby tents warm during the winter.
Wow.
So trying to get a little bit more information about the hole, Mel was told that this second Nevada hole was under the supervision of the Federal Bureau of Land Management, which is actually BLM.
Oh, okay.
It was BLM before BLM was
gotcha.
BLM. And is utilized by both Native Americans and the Bass people, again, their community, for grazing sheep. And it was assumed that this hole had been found sometime during the 1800s. There's your history.
Yeah.
Do you feel satisfied? That was for you.
Somewhat.
I was going to cut that, but I'm like, Charlie might want to know that. Nobody else. So this should come as no surprise, but Mel's interest was entirely piqued by this new hole, and he decided to do some tests. Because that's his new calling now. He's the test master.
He's the whole guy.
Hopefully, he's the whole guy. Hopefully, he brought some fishing line. They didn't have fishing line. I think more so now than the depth, he was like, wow, why is this metal thing so hot?
Mm-hmm.
Why is it so warm? Let's test that. So, Mel and some of the Basque people took store-bought ice, put it in a bucket, and then they lowered it about 1,500 feet. So when their bucket of ice returned to the surface after being down for just a few minutes, they discovered that the ice hadn't melted, but it hadn't stayed the same either. Instead, the ice now felt warm to the touch and it had a silica feel to it. I don't know how they tested this comet per se, but they claimed that the ice had become a flammable substance.
What?
I don't like the physics of that. The chemistry of that, I don't like. Why would they think to test if it was flammable? Did somebody light up a cigarette? And just,
that's so weird.
Like, oh man, that was ice. That's bad ice.
That's
right there.
Insane.
So no one could explain this chemical change in the ice. But one of the men brought the ice home and he filled his wood stove with it. And he claimed that the burning ice, the hot ice, burned for 3 months and seemed to have a strange penchant for sucking all of the moisture out of the air around it. And by the end of the winter, the wood stove had inexplicably plummeted through the floor of the man's shack, sinking 5 feet in the ground. And soon after, the entire hut that he was in was said to have dissolved into a fine wood dust. So just gone.
I mean, that's what you get when you burn weird ice.
Yeah, that's why you leave that.
You leave it in the hole.
Or in like the little carton, like when you break the ice. Sometimes when you break that ice carton, you try and get the ice out. Have you done that in the last like 10 years of your life?
Yeah.
Not fun.
No.
So according to Mel, a group of unidentified, probably government agent people.
Yeah, some guys.
Quickly descended upon the shack, or what the shack used to be, and attempted to
sweep it up.
They're going to clean the shit up and then we're going to dump it in the hole. No, they wanted to raise the wood stove because remember it had sunk 5 feet. The hut's gone. That's donezo. It probably blew away in the wind, but mm-hmm. the wood stove had fallen down. They're like, we got to get that up. So they used heavy chains and construction equipment, but they were unsuccessful until they filled the crevice around it with water. Mel and other eyewitnesses claim that upon contact with the water, the chains fused to the wood stove, and then they were able to lift it from its sunken ground.
Okay.
But the fact that you got chains fusing to the stove with the addition of water makes a chemist's head want to explode.
Yeah.
All of this to say that clearly they're like physiologically, chemically, there's some crazy stuff happening right now. So I will say, I know I've been asking you throughout, oh, do you think this is the end of the story? You know, press A to continue or insert a coin, 10, 9, 8. I wish this was the end of the story because I, as a human being, as Tyler, as an animal lover, as somebody who doesn't eat meat, I hate the next section of this story.
Oh, no.
But it's my job to talk about it. I also think it provides good commentary on Mel's mind and his sanity going forward. He decided enough of the ice, enough of the fishing line. It was time for a live subject.
Oh, no. Something... I was going to make that joke when you said they had sheep in the area. I was like, will they throw one down every now and again to sacrifice it?
So there are a lot of sheep
in
the area grazing, munching on grass or whatever sheep be munching on. And they thought, hey, why not wrangle up one of these sheep?
Oh, no.
And see what happens. So, yeah, you're hitting the nail on the head.
Oh, no.
So they find a sheep, they take it, and they start pulling it towards this Nevada hole. Similar to Mel's dogs back at the Devil Hole in Washington, Mel noted that the sheep did not like approaching the hole. The sheep started resisting aggressively, so they had to stun the sheep and stick it in a crate in order to actually get it to the hole. Then, once the sheep was in the crate, the men slowly started lowering the sheep into the hole, crate and all. At this point, just as it started getting below the surface, the sheep came to and started acting violently, thrashing its body back and forth like it knew it was life or death. They described hearing what they could only call absolute shrieks of terror coming from the sheep. Similar to the ice, they lowered the sheep crate to about 1,500 feet, and at this point, they could no longer hear the sheep screaming. However, something unbelievable and remarkable started happening. The metallic metal collar rim around the hole began to vibrate. Absolutely stunned by this vibration that they were seeing and not knowing how to react and just kind of freaked out, Mel and the men backed away from the hole, stood their ground, and just kind of sat back for about 30 minutes. What do we do? What are we witnessing? What is happening? What do we do? What is going on? So after about 30 minutes or so, they crept back and they started pulling the sheep and the crate back up. It was clear as soon as the crate reached the surface that the sheep was dead. This, of course, was not a good enough or a clear enough answer for Mel. Didn't answer any of his questions. So he decided to perform an immediate autopsy on the sheep and cut it open. The men discovered that the sheep looked like it had been cooked from the inside. They found a gelatinous, tumor-like glob where the sheep's internal organs should have been. Not that I think these guys know sheep anatomy. Mel removed this gelatinous tumor, and as they were handling it and looking at it, it started to move a little bit.
Oh no.
It started to move a little bit in their hands. So, why not cut that open too? So they sliced open the gelatinous tumor-like substance that they pulled from the sheep where its internal organs should have been. And what they saw could only be described by Mel as what looked like a seal fetus with an umbilical cord and everything. And to make what's happening even more crazy and strange and terrifying, all the men agreed that this seal-like fetus creature in his hand had haunting human-like eyes. So the men stared at shock, switching their focus from the dead sheep, cut open, cooked from the inside out, from this unknown hole, and this seal fetus-like creature with human eyes in their hands. Stunned, don't know what to do. Mel said they just stood in silence for hours, until Mel claims this seal-like fetus did a small nodding motion of its head and then dove back in the hole.
Oh. I was going to say, they went, yeet.
So freaked out, the guys jumped up, took the sheep carcass, tossed it back in the hole, and they left.
Oh, God.
But Mel did go on to say that this whole sheep, seal, fetus-like experience, while it was frightening in the moment, and obviously they felt shocked because it was completely unexplainable, he said he actually felt a level of compassion coming from this seal fetus-like thing.
Okay.
Yes. And also, he credits this encounter with this entity thing inside the sheep as the answer to why his esophagus cancer completely vanished. It was gone.
That's good.
It is good. It's strange. But the cancer disappearing somehow wasn't the strangest thing that occurred after this experience. Mel and other locals in the area began noticing a new species of bright colored birds that seemed to be making their home around this Nevada hole. Now, I'm not a bird expert. And so if somebody out there listens to my description and you're like, oh, it's just the so-and-so bird, let me know. Let them know. Let Mel know. But to them, they're like, this is really, really strange. They described it as being a bright red bird with a blue beak. And the locals called them sunbirds.
Okay.
And Mel came to the conclusion that it was almost like a live sacrifice, right?
Mm-hmm.
Like they put, it feels very Temple of Doom to me, Indiana Jones. They asked, when it wasn't an act, I don't think their intention, I don't think, was to kill. They just wanted to see what would happen.
Yeah.
They probably knew in the back of their mind it would die. But they're, so they put this sheep down there, this metal vibrates, this seal-like thing comes out. I think they're thinking they awoke something. And it's like they almost like opening the portal.
Yeah.
And in Mel's mind, a consequence of that is this new species came out of the hole. He truly believed that these red bird with blue beaks emerged from the hole. But we know that Mel is a man of science. We know that Mel likes to do tests and experiments. So what better way to experiment on this bird than find it, shoot it, and cut it open?
I couldn't think of anything more humane.
So primal. So, plan, shoot the bird down, inspect it. Unsuccessful.
Okay.
Not unsuccessful because he couldn't shoot the bird, because he actually hit the bird twice.
Okay.
It was unsuccessful because apparently the bird was impervious to his bullets.
You got a Superman bird over here?
Yep. He shot the bird twice. It kept flying. He went over to where he shot it, and he found two crumpled bullets sitting where the bird had flown over.
Bird said, what?
Yeah, come at me, bro. Is that all you got? I got blue beak, man. Finally, he described that this Nevada hole occasionally emitted a black beam of light.
What?
In his words, quote, this is a contradiction, but a black beam of light, okay, comes from the hole. It lasts a very short time, but it just goes directly up in the sky. Like, if you had a flashlight, it was capable of throwing up solid black, unquote.
Okay.
So that is the experience that Mel has had with these holes. Pretty crazy.
Wow.
And 8 years later, in 2008, another person came up and decided to put their name on wax describing the original, the OG hole, the Devil's Hole from Washington. So an intertribal medicine man, Gerald Osborne, who had the moniker Red Elk, described seeing the hole in 1961 when he was a young boy with his father. He claimed it was well known to the indigenous people as well as federal authorities. He said that it was estimated to be between 24 and 28 miles deep, which I did the math, and that is about 126,000 feet to 147,000 feet.
Wow.
So further than Mel's original estimation of 80,000. So what is Red Elk's theory about this Devil's Hole? He believed that the pit was actually an entrance to a tunnel that was connected to Mount Rainier, which is nearby Washington.
Yeah.
Which is associated with both UFOs, reptilian entities, a lot of stuff that we'll probably touch on later. He claimed that he actually saw a huge spaceship hovering over the hole, and that reptilians use the hole to transmit materials, occasionally human bodies and subjects, to their underground bases. So, that is the Devil's Hole, aka Mel's Hole, and the nameless Nevada Hole. So let's refresh on some of the theories that are around these holes, and then we will get to the discussion.
Okay.
So, before we get into the theories, I just want to say nothing is concrete, and it's not like, oh, you can go there. Oh, you're visiting Washington, and there's a shitty band playing at the Gorge? Here's a great tourist spot. It is something that is reported by people that is not. You can't just find it.
Okay.
It's like, you just, it's source. Trust me, bro. It's that. You know
okay,
what I mean?
I got you.
There's no clear cut evidence that this exists. I just want to be upfront about that. So with that said, a few theories. I got four of them on what could be going down.
Okay.
And there's many more. These are just the four that I picked. One, a literal cover up. Some say that the government filled the hole when they were finished using it for whatever purpose they had. Now, obviously, this is when Mel is out in Australia.
Mm-hmm.
Others say that instead of filling the hole, because they couldn't fill the hole because it just never freaking ends, they erected a site or a shed or a barn, something
over it.
Exactly, to hide it from prying eyes.
Like a big plane hangar.
Yeah. Yeah. Like one of the air hangar, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. And they should probably put a plane there too, because that's like double. Nobody's going to move a plane. In addition to this, some people think the government removed the Devil's Hole from Google Earth, which is kind of counterintuitive because they're like, they're putting big white blocks over it so you can't find it. I'm like, well, wouldn't you just go to the white
find
block?
Find the big white blocks?
Yeah. Oh, it might be there.
Yeah.
Even if it's like a 2 mile square, I feel like you could just use that to like to find it. But that's what people say. And who am I to say they're wrong?
If they're really going to cover it, they just take some trees and like copy paste trees over it.
Yeah, I feel like, let's say people started looking in 2000. Now you have 21 years to find it. I think it would be found. But at the same time, it's like, in my mind, if somebody gave you a 2 mile radius, it seems like on Google Maps, that wouldn't be that hard. But if you, like, it's 9 feet in diameter, it would be hard.
Hard.
It would be hard. Remember when we went, and completely off topic, when we went looking for the witch's graves?
Yeah.
It was hard.
Yeah.
Sometimes the world feels really small. And sometimes, like when you lose your car keys, it is a massive world.
Yeah.
It's a massive world. 2, aliens, right? There's people who feel aliens protect the area with a cloaking device. Kind of like when you were talking about, you know, way back in episode 1, like a holographic.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Maybe they're making it invisible. Maybe Mel was the only people that... Mel and like the villagers, that makes it sound like it's like Mel and his neighbors were the only people that could see it because they kept feeding it. You know what I mean? Maybe they allowed them to see it because they weren't telling anyone else. They weren't harming it.
Gotcha.
They were feeding it. Mm-hmm. And maybe to the outside world or other people, they hide it. There's no rhyme or reason. It's just, and Red Elk said he saw UFOs around it in spaceships. So there's the idea that maybe this hole isn't natural and there's an alien component to it. And they're either using it, they're hiding it. Something like that. 3, portal to another dimension. So maybe this leads to a different dimension entirely. Maybe the seal fetus thing is from a different, like, multiverse
type
thing.
It's like an interdimensional creature.
Yeah, not from our realm, where we live. And this could also help explain why some of the physiological aspects of the hole don't make sense, because they're not from where we're from. Not necessarily alien, not like our dimension and our galaxy, but like something else. You know, the way that the metal reacted, the way water reacted, the fact that it had like a microwave-like component to it with the sheet. Just this hole is not of our world naturally.
Right.
And 4, it's a portal to hell.
Oh, okay.
It's a portal to hell. It goes directly to hell. That's why it's hot. That's why it has warm components to it. And they literally did a sacrifice of a sheep to the devil, which then shut up these sunbirds who... have an attitude problem
and a benevolent seal.
And yeah, but it felt, what was the phrasing? He said it felt nice.
Empathetic?
No, that wasn't the phrasing. Compassion?
Compassionate.
Yeah, he felt compassion from it. But devil's tricky.
Yeah?
Devil's a tricky.
The devil's tricky.
Devil would be tricky. Also, the beam of light. It feels like this. I guess that could also file under alien or other dimension.
Yeah.
There's a lot going on. There is a lot going on. So with all of that said, are you ready to discuss? Because I am very excited to get your opinions. Before we get to the discussion, we have a couple new patrons we want to shout out and thank. And that would be Chris and Cece. Thank you both so much for joining our Patreon. Chris, there is a Rachel attached to your account. It is now gone. I hope she's okay. I don't know the inner workings of how your Patreon account is set up, but if Rachel's there too, we appreciate you as well. I want to thank everybody who's been joining us on Patreon, checking out our bonus content, listener submission interviews, polls about upcoming episodes, quizzes, director's cuts where you go back and listen to previous episodes, theatrical readings, tons of bonus extra content. So thank you to everybody who has been supporting the podcast. And I also want to thank the NFL for existing and starting tonight. they don't support us on Patreon. Not yet. That would be a flex. I would tell you, I would be the start of every episode. Hey, welcome to Believe in the Czar, where we're sponsored by the NFL. How you like that? But I'm just excited because as of the recording of this episode, that the new season is starting tonight. The Cowboys, who I don't care about, are facing Tampa Bay and Tommy Brady. Tommy.
Yeah, Tyler is physically excited.
Yeah, the game's already been on for about 40 minutes, so that you know how dedicated I am. I'm still doing this episode. Speaking of, let's head to the discussion. So, Charlie, there is a lot happening in this story. Where are you at? What are your thoughts?
Yeah, you don't say. There's a lot going on.
We got two holes.
Yeah.
And we got one guy.
When you first brought up the hole, it made me think of the Russian hole to hell, pit to hell. Mm-hmm. I actually want to do an episode on that sometime. It's on my list.
Do it up.
But it definitely made me think of that. There's just so much going on. Like, we talked about the dog that was thrown in there. That has not come back up. And, like, did that dog just, like, go back to live with the guy? Did it go live in the forest?
Was it different? If it's real, it feels like it just ran away.
Yeah.
Like, I feel like the hunter saw it, acknowledged it.
They nodded to each other.
And they jumped back in the hole.
Yeah, that's, there's just so much to unpack about this. I don't even know where to start. It's nice that he had a wombat rescue.
That was very nice.
Oh, okay. So, is his cancer, that he had cancer, is that searchable? Like, could you find that in records?
Like a medical record?
Yeah.
No idea.
Okay. Was his wombat rescue, was that searchable?
There was no title.
Okay. Okay. What about his property and his name?
Well, they couldn't reveal the location of the hole.
What about the property in general?
Like his address?
Not his address, but like...
It was the Manastash Range.
Yeah.
And the hole is reported to be in a densely forested area.
Okay. All right.
It's just a lot of vague stuff. It's hearsay.
Yeah.
It's a guy who went on Coast to Coast AM and told his story. That's what it is. It's a person telling their story on an audio platform, because audio platforms are amazing. Let me put it this way, because you're doing what I would do, which is wanting to dig deeper.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, I think we're going to have to talk about and dissect this at face value.
Okay. All right. I think you're right. I think that's really cool that there's a really deep hole. That's probably all I think there is. I don't know. I feel like there'd be more reports of like black lights in the sky, of like black beams, or I've never heard of these birds before. Maybe you're right. Maybe a listener is like, that's just the Utah red bird bluebeak.
Yep.
Like, yep, that's the name.
the red bird bluebeak.
or something stupid like the brown JPEG. I don't know.
And it's pixelated form. It's probably like the blue beak crane. I feel like that's what it would be called. I pictured them kind of as cranes. I don't think that's accurate.
Or the shot, or the fact that he shot the bird and it said, I didn't feel that.
I don't know enough to speak to this, and we haven't covered this as a topic yet, but apparently that is a close tie to Skinwalker Ranch, where like ritualist activity led to animals that were impervious to gunshots. I don't know how familiar you are with
Skinwalker Ranch. I am. Does that connection make sense or no? Not birds.
No, animals that are impervious to bullets.
The animal, only animal I can think about that got shot, it took it. It didn't bounce off of it. It took it.
Mm-hmm.
And it was like, it was wounded, but it didn't do anything to it.
Okay.
So it's not quite the same. And the seal thing, that feels like an interdimensional creature to me. If it was anything, that's what it would feel like it was.
Yeah. It feels like, if this is true, that it doesn't feel like a portal to hell to me.
No, I don't think so either.
Let's throw that in the hole.
Yeah.
Magic. So let's look at it being either a underground tunnel to something creepy and conspiracy-like down there versus a different, which could either be, if you want to think reptilians or if you want to think aliens. So think of it as an alien hole versus a dimensional hole.
Like, yeah.
Naturally occurring, but not of this world. Naturally occurring and not of this world kind of doesn't make sense. But that's the way I want to frame. I don't think it was man-made, even though there's bricks. I think maybe that was put there after. I don't think somebody dug the hole. Which one do one of those speak to you more?
I think like a dimensional rift, like coming through this, like cracking through the earth, that makes more sense to me than aliens.
The physiological aspect of it is just crazy.
Because it's so strange.
It just doesn't make sense with anything else that we understand on this planet. Like, and it's not from a different galaxy or anything like that where things could be different. That fell into our atmosphere or anything like that. It's like, it's here. It's on Earth. And it doesn't match like anything else. And there's always unusual places on Earth. You know what I mean? Where like there's certain seas that have different density.
Yep.
Places where there's always lightning in Venezuela. So like there are, you know, like the Aurora Borealis. If nobody reported seeing that except for one person, and we were doing an episode with us, like, there's this place up north where you can see, like, greens and blues in the sky, we'd be like, oh, super okay.
pretty colors.
Yeah, especially after you do acid. You know what
yeah,
I mean?
Yeah.
So the fact that it's well known, we're like, oh, it's because of this, which I can't speak to you right now. I know it's in the atmosphere. But you know what I mean? It's like, there are places on Earth where things seem to just be a little different, a little strange.
Mm-hmm.
But this just feels extreme, and it's like, I wish I could talk about Old, the movie, because there's aspects of this whole that make me think of that movie because of how the world is in that section of it. But I'm not going to spoil that for anybody. I think you should go see the movie Old.
Yeah.
Not sponsored, but you should go check it out. But it's just like, what if there's just something in there that just naturally leads to microwave-like tendencies?
Yeah.
Makes no sense to me. But I'm on the same boat you are. If I were to give credence to any of these, I think it would be dimensional.
That's what I picked.
Although the guy Red Elk did say he saw a spaceship above
aliens.
It.
Maybe they're just interested in like the dimensional shift, or I don't know.
Like, what if an alien ship crashed so intensely that it caused a hole and some of its like parts and stuff was left behind? Two ships. Listen. So remember when we did The Haunting in Houston and we talked about the ramen noodle thing?
Yeah.
And it's like, in an overview, terrifying, but when you break it down, it's like, what? So in a breakdown of the sheep, in 30 minutes, a sheep cooked from the inside died, and its internal organs were replaced with this seal-like fetus.
Mm-hmm. Was it a boy sheep or a girl sheep?
It was a sheep. I don't know.
Okay.
It was, it went, we don't know how sheep. Yeah, that's what they said.
I think so.
Okay. That, in 30 minutes, that's a lot. That's a bad day for that sheep.
Super fast.
Which I really hate. I'm covering jokes with just, I hate animal cruelty and violence. Mm-hmm. How could you even explain that? Like, does that lead to interdimensional? Like, does that mean, is it like time? Time's different? Sound is different. It doesn't make the same sound.
Yeah.
So it's just, and it's like the metal didn't make a clank when the toolbox hit it. But clearly we understand how the physiological aspect of that metal is different than anything else because it changes when it hits water.
Yeah.
I don't.
And the ice, too.
Yeah, warm ice.
Yeah.
And it ruined that whole, like, hut.
It's like it became different chemical. Like, it was a different kind of molecule.
Molecular?
Yes.
Yeah.
Different molecular equation or something.
Equation.
I don't know.
It would fill up an entire chalkboard to figure it out. So, us discussing it won't help us come to any more answers because I don't think there's anything to work through.
There's nothing we can come up with.
It's just kind of, like, I think it's trying to break away barriers and understanding, like really breaking down what we think about it, because so much happens in this story and it's not like a build up to one event. It's like you have to digest all of it.
Yeah.
So where are you at with this? And we'll keep it face value. We'll say even dimensional. Like, what is your believability scale that this hole exists, that Mel's story is real, and that these holes exist out there with these crazy characteristics?
I feel like I'm being a negative Nancy, because the last one I was not high either. This one I think is going to be a skeptical for me.
I'm in the same exact boat. Same exact boat. It's a great story.
Yeah.
It's entertaining. It's crazy.
Super fun.
It plays into people's conceptions about the government covering things up, being sneaky. You get a little bit of aliens, a little interdimensional, a little animal abuse. A
little bit of seals.
Yeah, it's just like, yeah, maybe we should both listen to, let's do this. Let's both listen to the interview sometime in our lives. And let's wait till maybe do an episode on Mount Rainier and some of the stuff about that.
Okay.
I think there's certain other things that we can do episodes on and research that I think we can tie back. I think this will be an episode we reflect on in the future.
I agree.
But for now, sorry, Mel, we both give you a skeptical. So that is our story on the Devil's Hole, aka Mel's Hole, aka the Nameless Nevada Hole. Crazy, interesting, and fun story. Don't know if it's true.
Not sure.
But it's nuts. Would you want it to be true because it's unusual? Or
I don't
does it
think
seem...
so. It's really scary to me.
I hope someone comes at us about those birds, though.
I do,
That'd
too.
Be really cool.
Yeah.
Sunbirds. Yeah, maybe we'll do an episode on sunbirds if they're real. Not that we do episodes on things that are real.
But... The red word text box.
What?
Bird. The red word bird.
You spelled it incorrectly, underlined red squiggly bird.
The red squiggly bird, yeah. The squiggly for short.
So thank you, everybody, for listening. I hope you're enjoying the show. As we touch on a little bit in between the episode and the discussion, if you're interested in bonus content, would like a little bit more to listen to throughout the week, throughout the month, we do have a Patreon, tons of bonus content. We already discussed it. If you're interested, go to patreon.com/bleedingbizarre. Check out our tiers. If it speaks to you, if it sounds interesting, if you're frustrated when the episode's over and you have no more new content, we both suggest checking out the Patreon.
That'd be a lot of fun for you and for us. And if you did really enjoy this episode, please feel free to leave a 5-star Apple Podcast review. Maybe say something nice. You don't have to. Don't worry about it. But if you do, we will screenshot it and we will text each other and say, did you see this nice thing? It's super cool.
Also, I want to say this. It wasn't on Apple. It was on Podbean, which is where we upload our episodes. Somebody did comment, oh man, that's great. And I appreciate you. That's awesome. I appreciate you. So again, I'm just going to throw it out there into the ether. If you really liked the episode, you really like the podcast, you haven't commented yet, you haven't left a review, just leave us another, oh man, that's great. And we'll appreciate it and we'll keep our eyes out. But as always, thank you so much for listening. I'm Tyler.
And I'm Charlie.
And catch us next week on Believing the Bizarre.
The podcast, as bizarre as you are.